So today we are in the second last chapter of this book. For me, this has been a very profound experience. The whole book is good, but the last 11 chapters, I would recommend each one. Read it carefully when you are at home. Maybe read one chapter each day, read it twice with full attention, because the reading of this book, these words will transport you to the higher, and you will notice that if you do it with attention. Because the master himself, who is experienced and has realized this truth, is putting his own experience in words as best as is possible. And reading them, for me at least, every afternoon as I prepare, it really is very uplifting. And I would recommend each one to read these last 11 chapters called Hasten Slowly. Read them slowly. So today we'll do the 37th chapter. There's some things I'm going to talk from the book and then some of my other ideas, so you can follow. As it is said, there's a difference between a scholar, a philosopher, and a knower of truth, or a saint. There's the three different classifications. Scholar is one who has studied. He knows the Upanishads, he can chant them, he can even teach, you know, he can even sit and teach and give discourses on the Upanishads, on the Gita, on the highest knowledge. And he may become get a PhD, he may give PhD to others, teach other PhD students, but until he has experienced the inner silence, his understanding is incomplete. So that is the first stage. The second is the philosopher, where this individual not only knows, but to some extent has thought about it, has tried to organize it, try to analyze it, try to study it to some extent, and maybe compared other teachings and tried to some extent, is better than a scholar who just mechanically teaches what he or she knows. But this person actually tries to understand it and compare it with other teachings. But until they have experienced their divine nature, my divine nature as Om, as the Lord, as the consciousness, until you have experienced it, your teaching or your study is incomplete. So, of course, we need to study the scriptures. We need to know the technique of meditation. We need to understand it. But then, unless you can move internally and experience this inner silence, until then, your studies are incomplete. And the goal of meditation or the goal of spiritual life is to reach that inner silence. And it is possible for every one of us. That's what the masters tell us. That continue to do the effort, and wherever you reach, it is good. Because if you believe in rebirth, then this journey continues. Wherever you have reached in your spiritual journey, you may have to end a new life, have to learn ABCD again and learn how to walk, talk, eat, and drink. But the spiritual knowledge stays with you. And even if you do not believe in rebirth, in this life itself, this can be experienced. This is not something to be experienced in heaven or somewhere else, but here and now. So when you transfer the focus of the mind from the outer world of objects, emotions, and thoughts and transfer it inward, that is the process of meditation. In the beginning stages, we are all body conscious and body living for the body, to beautify the body, to make it more healthy, to eat, to exercise, build a better house, a better car, you know, more relationships with people and more friends and more contacts and more money. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're only going to live for the body, then your progress will be very limited. There are others who give importance to the mind, but then they are so caught up in their mind. Oh, my mind is stressed. Oh, I'm going through so many problems. And the mind takes them for a ride. So when I sit for meditation, my mind is racing, or when I'm throughout the day, I'm so stressed. And then I go to a psychiatrist or get some Valium or take up to alcohol or other, you know, other sense pleasures, which temporarily dull the mind, but do not take the mind anywhere. There's a very beautiful example I was listening in the Bhagavad Gita, where it says that we are like a boat. And what is the water? The water is the sense objects. Now my boat is going under the control of the intellect. The intellect is the captain of my ship. But what are the mind and the senses? So ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker is on this journey in a boat. Intellect is the captain. The mind and the senses are like the wind. Suppose a strong wind comes. I'm going in this water of the sense objects. You know, I'm seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. But suppose something I see and I get fascinated, or I mentally imagine, if I had this, I would, my life would be so perfect. And so the senses and the mind are like the wind. And if we are under the control of the senses and mind, just like a boat, if it's a small boat and it's going along the ocean, and a strong wind comes, what happens to the boat? The poor boat gets diverted. The captain is trying to control it, but it's a small boat. Instead of reaching its destination, it ends up somewhere else. But suppose the boat is not a small boat, but it's a ship. It's a, you know, like a cruise ship, not like the Titanic. But if it's a cruise ship which is strong and powerful and has all the latest equipments, no matter how strong the wind comes, the ship cannot be diverted. So similarly, we, because our intellect is weak, we let our mind and our senses control us. So I see something, I get distracted, I hear something, or even when I'm sitting for meditation, suddenly some thought comes in my mind. You know what? I should have had a cup of coffee, you know, before I sat. And immediately your mind gets disturbed. Or yesterday, you know, she said this in the office. Today I'm going to. So either from inside or from outside, either the senses distract you, or from the mind itself, the boat of our personality gets distracted and ends up, instead of ending up in the goal of meditation, ends up somewhere else in the sense objects. Oh, if I want this, I want that, I should have this or that. So they say, either make your knowledge so profound, make your mind so strong, like the strong ship, like the, you know, like the big cruise liner, which no wind can disturb. So either your knowledge should be strong, or anchor the boat. Just as the boat, if it is anchored firmly in the ground, even if it's a small boat, but the boatman releases the anchor and the anchor catches on to a piece of rock, the wind may come, but the boat remains unmoved until the wind dies down, and then the person can continue his journey. So similarly, if our mind is anchored in God, make that your firm anchor, that God, you are my refuge, you are my support. And when your mind is anchored firmly in God, then no matter what kind of sense objects come, what kind of thoughts come in the mind, my intellect is stationed in the Lord, and nothing can disturb it. So this boat example is very, very beautiful, which is very useful in meditation, that in meditation, my knowledge should be clear and my mind should be anchored in the Lord. So with that understanding, we sit for meditation. Now, one of the points brought up in this chapter is that in meditation, you may get certain visions, or you may get certain sounds, and that can happen, that in your meditation, you may see blue light, or you may see multiple colors, or you may see patterns, or you may hear some bells, or hear some beautiful melodious music. in your meditation. And there's actually, I know one school of meditation which encourages their followers that look for sounds and, you know, seek the sound, seek the light. And that shows that you are progressing. In my opinion, and the opinion of the master who has written this chapter, he says these visions should be totally rejected because they are delusory. One should not search, because in meditation we say, now how they say that you see a blue light, okay, let me look for the blue light. So, or let me hear the sound of the bells or the sound of the some music. Then what happens is you are seeking something, and the mind is very good. It will create that. What you want to see, it will create that light, or it will create those patterns, or it will create that sound and that music. And then what happens is you get sidetracked, because then every time you sit, you want to hear that sound again. You want to see that blue light again. Or so what they say, that what came and went cannot be the absolute. If it came, suppose you sit for meditation and the blue light came and it went when you finished. So that cannot be the reality. That cannot be God, because God does not come and go. God is permanent. That cannot be my Om, my inner self, because that is permanent, that is eternal, that is everlasting. So whatever comes and goes, reject it as delusory. It is a projection of my mind. If it happens, let it happen, but let me not get attached to it. Let me not seek it. And in fact, they say in this book, it should be destroyed. Even the idea of any of these mental projections should be totally rejected. I do not need them, because my goal is not. And you may get feelings of joy and some, you know, and you start looking for that joy. In my meditation, I'm not looking for anything. I am just being. Just be in that silence, be in that inner silence, and just contact that inner self and just stay there. Do not seek anything. Do not search anything. Does not mean that I should not have a goal in meditation, but the goal of meditation is to encounter my true nature. Now they say there is this and there is that. So there is this world, and then there is that state of enlightenment, that state of higher vision. And they say nothing of this can go into that. So what they mean is, obviously, your body cannot be transported. The body remains here. The mind and the intellect cannot experience that. So you cannot take your mind and intellect. Your mind and intellect also have to be left behind. And in that final state of enlightenment, it's not that the person dies or gives up his or her body. But at that time, there is no body consciousness. There is no awareness of the mind. There are no thoughts. There are no emotions. There is total inner silence. But for an enlightened master, for you and me, while we are progressing, we say, okay, there is this world and that. And I have to reach that. And that is within me, not outside. That is not somewhere out in space, but in me as the life, as consciousness. But for an enlightened master, once he has experienced that, then for him or her, this whole world is one. See, that person sees the divinity everywhere, experiences that and this as one. For us, it is two. There is this world and there is that state. Am I making it clear? But for an enlightened master who has experienced that, then for that enlightened master, this is also the same. So he or she sees the divinity everywhere. He sees the God everywhere. That's why Jesus could say, love thy neighbor as thyself, because I am in all.
Yeah.
Everything is one, one state, one experience. Yeah, that. So that final experience is oneness. That's why we call this teaching Advaita. Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two. So there are not two. It's not that the world is separate and God is separate. They are actually one. But in our state, we start as two, but then the final experience is one. But I have to understand that actually it is one, and this world is just a illusion, just a projection upon that. And ultimately, the world is nothing but that one consciousness appearing in different names and forms, and it is my ignorance that I don't see God. So what is the process of spiritual growth? So they say, first of all, purify your mind. And all four aspects of your personality have to be purified. Purified means your actions have to be pure, your emotions have to be pure, your thoughts have to be pure, and your vasanas, your desires have to be pure. Somebody said, all of you go or none of you go. So you cannot say that, okay, my thoughts are good, my actions are good, even my desires are good, but I have some negative thoughts. I have some anger, I have some jealousy, I have some selfishness, I have some lust, or my emotions are very good. My ideas are good, my desires are good, but I am unable to do anything. I am unable to serve. I am unable to sit and meditate. I am unable. So all four have to become pure. My actions pure, my emotions pure, my ideas pure, and my desire should be pure. And ultimately, one goes beyond desires. So what they say, reduce your selfish desires, make them unselfish. And ultimately, even the desire to realize or know God disappears, because then you understand that God is not somebody to be known, but God is my own inner nature. So that is the state of enlightenment. From knowing God, one experiences God's presence as me, as I, this divinity. So that is the final state. Does not mean that the person becomes God, but becomes one with God, and there is no separation. And for that, one has to have regular study of the scriptures, read these books, reflect on it, on the teachings, whatever are there. Have firm faith in yourself, firm faith in the teachings, firm faith in God. And work with devotion and dedication to God. So every activity I do, no matter what job I am doing, whether I am a mother or a housekeeper or a teacher or an engineer or a doctor or an executive, no matter what I am doing, I dedicate my activities to God. And whoever comes in front of me is God himself appearing in this particular form. So whether I am taking care of my children or my house or my work or my business, I see divinity everywhere. And they say that do not be in the mind. If you are in the mind, if you are in the mind, so what happens? The mind has overtaken me, and then the mind is pulling me for a ride, and I cannot do anything about it. And that's the problem. It's like being in the river. If you are in the river will pull you along. But if you are on the banks of the river, you can watch the flow of river and enjoy that. That example I have given many times. But that's very important in meditation. Do not be in the mind, but watch the mind like a witness. And in that inner silence and that tranquil state, there are no outgoing thoughts. There are no outgoing thoughts, but there is only the inner silence. Talking about silence reminds me of a story. So there was this monkhood where new students would come, and they had to maintain silence. And after 12 years, they were allowed to speak two words. That's all. I don't know if any of you has heard this story. It's very nice. So after 12 years, you are allowed to speak two words. Otherwise, you have to maintain silence. If you start talking, they kick you out. So when this young monk joins and he stays for 12 years, and after 12 years, he goes to the teacher and he says, bed hard. You know, my bed is hard. Okay, teacher doesn't say anything, goes into silence. After 12 years, again, he goes to the teacher. Food cold. He's only allowed two words, food cold. 12 more years of silence. Then he goes to the teacher and he says, I quit. So then one monk tells, the senior monk tells the other, what happened? He left. The monk says, doesn't surprise me. All he did was complain. I don't know. There's lots of stories I hear, and they, when the moment comes, they come to me. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's worth knowing. Because all the time he was in the silence thinking about uncomfortable things instead of thinking about God and thinking about the Lord within. So in that silence, which is a completely tranquil state, there should be no outgoing thoughts, no thoughts of what am I going to do after meditation, or what happened yesterday, or what happened tomorrow, or what will happen tomorrow, or what will happen after, where will I go, what will I do, what will I wear today, what, whom will I meet, or she said this yesterday, or last year, or 3-5 years ago. So our mind is either running out into the past or running out into the future. Keep it in the now. That's what the teaching is. In the now, in the present, and in the Lord's presence within. So there's a very tranquil divine state within us. We are all divine creatures. We are all God's creatures and God's creation. And God himself has entered within us. And that's why we are able to talk and walk. And that's what the Bible even says, that God is in you. All of the scriptures say that, that you are the divinity who at this moment is walking and talking and functioning, and never forget that. So never lose that inner silence. So in the meditation, when the mind becomes quiet, and how does the mind become quiet? Through all the processes that we have talked many times. You relax your body, you close your eyes so you're not seeing anything, you observe your breath, you can chant the mantra. Today we'll do the chanting of the Om, how to meditate on Om. We have done that before. So when that quietude of the mind is obtained, reached, then just stay in that quietude and receive that inner peace, that inner joy, that inner bliss, but not remembering it, not thinking, you know what, I'm going to remember this tranquil state and I'm going to go tell my neighbor or my spouse, or I mean, you could discuss it with your guru that these are the feelings I'm going through, but do not make it into an announcement. Oh, you know, today I experienced that, or today I have reached that. I mean, if in a group like this, if you want to share, it's okay, but it's not something to be announced to the world, because then it becomes just a play of the ego that I have reached or I am so involved. So do not try to remember, do not try to recollect, do not try to spread this understanding, but just receive, just stay in silence and say, okay, God, what are you telling me? So there's a very beautiful saying. They say, in prayer, I talk to God. In meditation, God talks to me. So that experience of the inner divinity speaking and staying in that inner silence. And there's another very beautiful line in the Bhagavad Gita. We do the Gita every Sunday at 11 o'clock. I think some of you do come. But there is a very beautiful line in the 6th chapter, which is devoted to meditation. The Lord says, Atma samstham mana kritva na kinchit api chintayet. So once you have centered the mind in the self, centered in the mind, in the thoughts, in the self, the Lord, then have no outgoing thoughts and have no other thoughts, but accept that I am that divinity. And that divinity is me. And even ultimately, even that thought disappears. You start with multiple thoughts, and from multiple thoughts, you go to one thought, which is either Om or silence or Om or the whatever the mantra. But even ultimately, even that disappears, and in that silence, you experience that tranquil state, that divine state, which is the Lord himself. So it happens. It's not an overnight process. It takes effort and it takes constant effort, but the reward is worth it. It's so much fruitful, because they say the Lord, see, the journey to anywhere else, Like, say, I want to climb Mount Everest. The journey is very hard. And then when I reach Everest, I look around. It's so beautiful. It's all worth it. But in spirituality, the journey itself is pleasant. The journey is not a struggle. It's not a problem. The journey is joy, and the goal is joy. When you reach it, wow. So God, even the path is joy, and the goal is joy. In the world, the path is always a struggle. Like, I want to establish my business, so I start my business. I work very hard, very hard. After 5 years, now I'm rich, I'm successful. Then you enjoy that. But 5 years I had to work hard to establish my business. But here, the path of spirituality is, path is God, and the goal is also God. So it's beautiful all the way through. So it's not that when I reach some final state of enlightenment, I will be happy. I'm happy as I am progressing. That at least has been my experience, whatever little I have reached. So I would encourage everyone to continue. This book, as I said, please read it, because this book is very beautiful for anybody who wishes to meditate. And the last 11 chapters are unbelievably profound. They will take you to that highest state if you read that. And just to mention, the next week is the last week of this book, and then we'll be starting a new text called Kindle Life in 2 weeks, which is a book of short articles, but they are very practical. It is a little simpler. This one is a little higher. So I thought I would touch on some simpler topics just to get our concepts clear. So it's a very nice book. The ideas are beautiful, but it is a more practical book. So we'll be starting that in 2 weeks. Next week will be the last class for this one. It has been a pleasure for me doing this, and I would encourage everybody to read it. Any questions? Any comments? We have a few minutes.
When I took the advanced course in Art of Living, first I had no clue what it was. They don't say what's going on. They said, don't expect anything.
Right.
Just come here, then you'll see what happens. So when I went there, and it was in Lake Tahoe, first day the teacher, when Sri Ravi Shankarji tells, you're not supposed to talk for a week. My husband said, this is the best class for you. Go.
That's true.
When I went to the hotel back, I had to write, do you want coffee? Then I'll write it in a piece of paper, yes or no. Then she thought, can she not talk? I can talk only to the teacher. But that made me, I never was in that situation.
Right.
I had no clue about it. But that was the most profound experience I experienced, because I wasn't interested what was going on outside, because I'm not going to react to that. I was not going to talk, so I wasn't paying attention. I was only talking about why he told me. He said, you will figure out yourself. That's what the teacher was telling me.
Yes.
Then I was thinking, what in the world is going on? But I was at peace, because I was not involved in the what's going on around me or nothing. I mean, I was, because I was not reacting, I was
right.
not thinking, the mind was completely not much working. So
right.
it was quiet, and it was kind of peaceful. And I never, and the all sattvic food they give, morning, afternoon, they give limited, but it was more than enough. I was thinking, oh my God, is that the only food I'm going to eat? Because in the home, I snack and all that. So, but that was, when he said, it was ingrained in my mind, that's all we need. We don't
Right.
need more food. And I lost about 7 to 8 pounds in a week. I mean, I ate. Things happened. I was happy, and I was lightweight. I could do more yoga poses. And I was energetic with all the positive energy around me.
Good.
I really experienced the true feelings. People brought the mattresses and all that, because of all day courses. Some people even brought and made themselves comfortable He said, drink whatever you want. It's not an issue. Some people ask, can I drink wine and all that? I'm not going to say yes or no. You'll figure out yourself. Some people said, you didn't go with them in the evening. They stopped drinking. Nobody told them not to drink. Mm-hmm. But it's just the thought.
Right. It disturbs you.
Yeah, it's just the thought. Because the teacher was telling next day, if I tell you not to drink, then you will drink. Oh, why did he say? Oh, he's not a good teacher. Maybe I'll find somebody else. Then he said, it's open-minded. I'm not saying anything. You figure out yourself.
Right. Some people smuggle cell phones. They will take their cell phones to these retreat. And that defeats the whole purpose. When you are in a retreat where you are supposed to be silent and then you are checking your text messages, and at the end of the day, that is absolutely foolish, because we are so attached to these electronics. You know, that's the new bondage. I've seen a cartoon where this person has a chain, like a, you know what, the handcuffs,
yeah.
And he's handcuffed to his cell phone, and that is the new bondage, you know, the new age bondage, where I'm so stuck that without the cell phone I am nobody. And people actually do that to the silent retreat. They smuggle their cell phones. They are told not to do that. And yeah, go ahead.
When I walk, well, I don't have my dog anymore, but when I walk, I leave my cell phone at home. And people say, well, what if something, I don't worry about that, because that's,
yeah,
like walking is kind of a meditative practice for me.
Absolutely.
And you can look at nature, but if I don't want it. And but people just can't believe that you don't go without it. And I'm like, well, years before we didn't have them. And are you okay? Yeah.
Right.
I don't
right.
worry about my safety.
Even some of the schools, the teachers take their cell phone. There is a basket. Everybody leaves the cell phones there and have a seat like that. They don't want to be distracted. They started like that. Even some of the big companies, they said that not to bring the cell phone because you are on the company time.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you even these IT companies,
yeah,
these people, if you call them or text them at work, they are not supposed to answer. Yeah, because you are right. If you're this on company time, people are otherwise playing games or, you know, surfing the net. Yeah. So work towards this inner silence. That is the essence or message of this chapter. And it starts with outward silence, like she was saying. For us, you may not be, if you can go away for a week or 10-day retreat, that's good. But even otherwise, maybe set aside an hour every day when I'll be in silence. I'll meditate or spend some time in nature. Just sit in your backyard, enjoy the trees, especially the weather is good, getting better, the birds, the flowers, the wind, the sunrise or the sunset. So spend some time in nature, in solitude. And that's very, very important, because we are so... And again, they don't have your cell phone when you're sitting in nature. Then it should be you and nature. Because nature is very powerful healer. Because nature, it connects you to that. Because she's like the mother. You see the divinity in nature. And you can never go wrong being one with nature. It's rain when it's falling. The other night I did that. I went out and it was raining. But it was not a very cold rain. It was a warm rain. So I just stood there for 10 minutes with no umbrella, no hat, no raincoat. And just got wet. And it was so beautiful. And I just came in and, you know, dried my hair and, you know, took off my jacket, which was wet. And nothing happened. But to enjoy that, you know, be one with that nature is so beautiful. Rain is a beautiful thing. Anything, the sunrise, the sunset, the moon. These days we had the crescent moon early morning, and I used to get up and watch that around 5 or 6, and it's very pretty. Now, of course, it's...
I saw it Monday.
Yes.
And it was like this pink-purple sky.
Yes.
And then there was like crescent moon, and there was a little bit of clouds. It was just beautiful.
Right, right. Yeah, the sky was completely orange and then became pink-purple. Yeah, it was beautiful. And then the crescent moon was there. Yes, I saw that too, Monday morning. I do that in the morning, go out and try to watch the... be with nature. Any other questions? Any comments?
They say that the best time is to do the meditation is the Brahma Muhurta in the morning, around 4 to 5:30 or something.
Yes, around 3 to 5. Yes.
Something.
But you up to 6, you can say.
Give
But the 3 hours, especially, yeah, the early morning is the best time, because then the sun is rising and there is all positive energy everywhere in the world. But whenever you have time, meditate. If you, morning is the best time, but somebody wants to meditate in the evening is fine, afternoon is fine, every time. There is no good time or bad time to remember God. That's my theory. Remember him all day. There's nothing wrong with that. But some aside time should be set aside for exclusively for meditation. And that is my time with God. That's how one should. That's my appointment with God.
They are teaching the meditation in San Francisco schools for the small kids.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That would be so great.
That's good. One of our teachers here in Bal Vihar, Naina Patel, she has 8th and 9th graders, and she teaches them meditation to 8th and 9th graders. Regularly, she'll do that and teach them about...
In the school or here?
Here, in our Sunday school.
Sunday school, okay.
In our Sunday school.
She told me she approached some of the schools about actually just offering it to the teachers, and there's kind of a... resistance, because there's a lot of fundamental Christians who just don't understand that you can, anyway.
Right.
And I was raised that way, so I understand where they're coming from.
Right, and that my children are learning something which is outside.
Well, they believe it's almost of the devil.
Yeah, so the heathen, right.
Which is very sad, because how much better the world would be, because it's education how they're doing it. It's so intense now, and it's just, not healthy for kids, but
right.
I'm working in this one. That's a little bit, so I get on.
True. And even the curriculum, even when they talk about other religions, they don't really understand them. Like when they talk about Hinduism, they only talk about cow worship and caste system, and
they don't
give them a true picture of what the width of Hinduism and how wide it is and how inclusive it is. That's not covered in the textbooks. They're very almost 19th, 20th century backward. Yes.
Okay, well, that's been very frustrating for me, because I go around to all my current family friends that are Christians and some of these kind of people, and I say, hey, Hinduism is like the original Christianity. You know, I mean, it's one God, and nobody believes me. And I looked up, I wanted to know what was the difference between Buddhism and Hinduism, because Buddhism is an offshoot of Hinduism.
Right.
And it said that the Buddhists don't believe in that there's a self, and then it said that Hinduism has many gods or something, and it's like, no, I can't get people to understand. Are you teaching us the real thing? You know, because this is perfect. I mean, this is right down the line, and yet, you know, there's all these other variations of it out there.
Yeah. I think what we believe, that there is one God, and it takes different forms. Like here also, you see different forms. You see Krishna, you see the Mother Goddess, and when you go, so there is one God. That's what we believe. We call him Brahman, the big one.
So there's many manifestations.
Manifestations. Just as a lady could be in the house, she could be a mother. When she goes to visit her parents, she's a daughter. Then at work, she's a manager or an executive. And then when she's driving, she's a driver. When she's in the pool, she's a swimmer. When she's playing tennis, she's a tennis player. Mm-hmm. So she's playing all these roles, but she's one.
I'm different roles. My Catholic friends they worship Mary as much as Jesus. You know, she's a goddess.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. As long as they understand that they are manifestation of that one Father in heaven.
Okay, I think that needs to be explained.
Explain
to
them that Jesus, Mary, and that Father in heaven are one. That's why he talks about the Trinity, mm-hmm. the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. So the Father is the Father in heaven, Son is Jesus, and the Holy Spirit is the consciousness in every one of us. And all the Trinity is one. See,
I've been a Christian for 50 years, and that's the first time somebody's actually made sense explaining the Trinity.
But it's really not ours to explain. When people are ready, they come. So I don't even bring it up. I don't mention it. I don't, you know, if someone would ask, I would tell them, but.
Well, I think a lot of people are robbed of the beauty and the joy of a spiritual life.
By their own BMI.
No, by misrepresentations of Christianity.
Right.
That are,
but that's, it's still, it's an ego attachment to a system. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. It's just another version.
There was a gentleman who used to come regularly for a while. He was very impressed. And then he's a Baptist. And some of his Baptist friends got him and said, well, what are you doing? Where are you going? You're, you know, going in, into sin and all those things. And they prevented him from coming and he never came.
I told one of my sister's friends that came out and I said, why would you go there? Why wouldn't I? So that's all I said. Why wouldn't I?
It's okay. You know, like you said, when the grace is there, when your thirst is there, the grace of God is on you, then automatically this knowledge comes. The teacher comes.
And I realize now, when I was very young and raised in this, I always had that question, because we were told you say this on prayer and everyone else goes to hell kind of thing. And I'm like, and I remember I was only 8 years old and I thought, surely anyone who's seeking truth winds up in the right place. But then now I know there's not, it's not, heaven is really about the state of existence. It's not, there is heaven, but I mean, it's really about the state of existence.
Mm-hmm. It's just a different state of existence. Okay, we may go a little over. Is everybody okay today, or are you in a rush? Because we went a little over with the questions. So the breathing, you all know, so I won't do that. You can do it on your own. Today we'll chant Om. So today we'll be chanting Om, but we'll start with the same process. Eyes closed. Consciously relax your body from head to toe. Back is erect but not stiff. Pay attention to each part of the body and completely relax. Do not make an effort to relax, but just observe each part. And it will automatically relax. Do not strain to relax. From the head to the toes, and from the toes back to the head. Now pay attention to the breath. Slow, deep breaths in and out. And pay attention to the gap in between inspiration and expiration, and expiration and the next inspiration. Enjoy the breath as it goes in and as it leaves. It's God's supreme gift to me, the breath. Now we'll chant Om. We'll chant three times loudly, three times whisper, and then chant it mentally. And pay attention to the gap in between the chanting. Together. Now three times just whisper, so only you can hear it. Keep on chanting Om mentally, and slowly and lengthy chanting, and then slowly prolong the gap in between each Om, and ultimately the chanting will disappear into the gap, into the silence, the deep inner silence from which the sound of the chant is emerging. If your mind wanders, go back to breath observation and chanting, and then go back into the silence.